Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines, with 4,000 flights to 250 cities in some 40 countries around the world every day. It's easy to book your next flight at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly. I'm Rick Steves, and this is Travel with Rick Steves. Today, I'm traveling to Japan with Ruthie Kanagi. Ruthie Kanagi, born and raised in Japan, spent a good part of her life in the United States, and is bicultural and bilingual, and writes a guidebook called Living Abroad in Japan. Ruthie Kanagi, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Rick.
You've got sort of an insight into Japanese culture and American culture, and I've loved traveling in Japan. In fact, my favorite place to eat anywhere in the world is in Japan, and I found Japan the most challenging country and the most fascinating in a lot of ways that I've traveled in, and I think just as important as a list of important sites is an insight into the culture and the fine points so that we can understand what's going on around us. And for that reason, your Living Abroad in Japan book would be important. I know it's primarily written for people living or working in Japan, but yes, for anybody traveling in Japan, you need to understand the little ins and outs of the culture.
Yes. I would say that the approach or attitude that is most successful if you're going to Japan is to try to be observant and patient and persistent. Don't give up. And also appreciate silence. So when you're trying to communicate with people, they may be silent for a little bit because they're either trying to think of how to say it in English or they're not quite sure how to answer. But just kind of slowing down a little bit and being observant and patient helps you go a long ways.
Well, that's part of the local religion, isn't it?
Right. Zen is a form of Buddhism that was developed in Japan.
It's got these rock gardens.
Meditation. And did you know that you can also stay overnight at some Zen temples?
I stayed in a youth hostel, which was some kind of a temple.
Is that right?
And it was up in the mountains. Forget the name, but boy, it was a fascinating experience. And one thing, let's talk a little bit about religion and daily life in Japan, because in some ways it seems kind of secular, and in other ways it seems permeated with religion. And to me, it's a confusing permeation of religion, because you've got Shinto, Buddhism, and Christianity.
Right. Well, to Japanese, it's not confusing at all. They take a very pragmatic approach to religion. So depending on the particular event or function, you choose either the Shinto or Buddhist or Christian ceremony.
Really? Depending on the function?
Yes. For example, newborn Shinto has to do with life and sacredness. So newborn babies are taken to the Shinto shrine when they're about 1 month old and dedicated. And weddings are either Shinto or Christian or both.
Huh.
And then Buddhism, of course, takes care of the afterlife, so most funerals are conducted in Buddhism.
Now, your parents were missionaries in
yes.
Japan, is that right? And you were born in Japan in the 50s?
I was, yes.
I understand from a missionary's point of view, it's kind of frustrating because Japanese are very polite, and you
yes.
say, you want to be a Christian, you want to be saved, and they go, sure.
Right.
But they all of a sudden, they just add that to their pantheon.
Exactly. That's pretty much the mindset of Japanese culture, and they've incorporated not just religion, but even their language, the written language, comes from the Chinese written language and so on.
So it's kind of tied in with this almost frustrating politeness among Japanese.
And how do you mean frustrating?
People are so polite, you don't really know what they think.
Well, there's a distinction in Japan between kind of your relationships with your in-group called uchi and relationships with your out-group called soto. And so if you're dealing with people who are not part of your groups that you associate with, they maintain a very polite or even professional relationship. So you don't walk down the street in Japan and just smile and say hi to people you don't know. It never happens. But if somebody introduces you, if there's a go-between and introduce you, then you strike up a new relationship with somebody on the outside.
So it's very common, I would suppose, for American travelers to go over there and travel around and really not have a clue of what the problems are.
It could be, but, do some reading before you go. Read my book.
Yeah.
And also ask questions. Traveling in Japan is very safe, relatively safe, and there are ways to travel that aren't as expensive as going by the bullet train.
Right. You know, I was so fascinated by Japan. I'm doing all my work in Europe now, but I read a book similar to yours 20 years ago before going there, and the book's long gone now, but it just really impressed upon me the importance of having a primer to the culture so you can understand it. One thing I found, Ruthie, in my travels was there was no way to escape the modern world in Japan, really. I found that the modernity had gone to the far reaches of Japan. Were you able to find anything that was like forgotten in the past?
Partly depends what you mean by the modern world. It's true in Japan, no matter where you go, even way in the country in Hokkaido, you'll find a vending machine selling Coke, standing by the side of a road beside a farmhouse.
Right.
And no towns for miles around.
Right.
But there certainly are areas of Japan where you can get away from it all. I mean, it's 80% mountainous.
So where would you recommend? What are your favorites?
I would recommend getting on a local train, a slow train, and traveling to stations that the bullet trains and the express trains don't stop at. Get off and walk around and look around. You know, go to the mountains of central Japan, like Gunma Prefecture or
so Nagano. Just get off at a no-name town, even if your guidebook doesn't talk about it, and wander around.
Exactly.
That's what I did in India, and I found it was the best travel advice.
I think that would be a very good way.
Hey, we got some calls on the line. I'm talking with Ruthie Kanagi, who writes a book called Living Abroad in Japan. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we are traveling in Japan. We've got Dory on the line from Corte Madera in California. Dory, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a question or a comment for Ruthie?
Well, we traveled in Japan, and was the place that you stayed at in Takayama?
Takayama, that was it.
Yeah, because we stayed in a Buddhist temple up there. It's a hostel.
Yes, exactly. I loved it. The breakfast was so great, sitting cross-legged on the floor and breaking my raw egg over the hot rice and eating those tiny little crunchy fish.
The other thing that I find interesting about Japan, I found it much easier to order in restaurants there because they have all those little mock-ups of the meals.
Oh, yeah.
So they all know the word for window, and then they take you out and you just point, and you don't have to know French or German or Japanese.
It's a beautiful thing for our listeners, so they don't know. In the window, they've got little mock-ups of everything on the menu, so the tourists can see what noodles they want or whatever.
That's wonderful.
Hey, Dory, Takayama. Now, I remember, Ruthie, I could know the words there because I was trying to learn Japanese.
Yes.
Takayama. What does that mean?
High mountain.
So yama is mountain?
Mountain.
Takayama. So I remember being able to piece things together with my Japanese a little bit, and it was very helpful. And it seems overwhelming, but if you learn a little bit of the characters and you learn a few of the modules that make common words, you're making good strides.
And if you know, we learned about, I would say, about 50 words, and we were really able to communicate quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The most important, I think, was excuse me, sumimasen.
Sumimasen, that's a good one.
They really appreciated it when you tried to just say a few things.
And you embrace the culture, and pretty soon you find yourself kind of bowing as you leave rooms almost.
That's true, you do.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's a wonderful, wonderful sort of contagious flair for living, I think.
It is. It's just a wonderful place to go, just very cordial. One of my favorite places was Hakone National Park.
Yes.
And there's a course that this is where all the Japanese go for vacations. And it's a course where you take a train, a bus, a boat, and then you take three types of cable cars and funiculars around, and you buy one ticket, and you spend the whole day with all Japanese. There were no Americans there whatsoever.
Wow.
It's a fabulous place to go.
Hey, hang on here just a minute. Julia in Prague has emailed us, and she says, we must see Koya-san, a temple-laden town in the mountains. You can even stay in a temple there overnight.
Yes.
Do you know about Koya-san?
No, I don't.
That's, I think, kind of the headquarters of one of the sects of Buddhism, and it's quite remote. It's north of Kyoto, I believe.
That's great.
And, you can go there and stay there and learn about Buddhism and stay overnight.
I think there's no shortage of opportunities for people who are genuinely interested in these aspects of Japanese culture to find lavish opportunities to learn about the religion and so on.
The Japanese National Tourist Office is fantastic for resources. I happen to live in San Francisco, so I could just go to one here. And they just had millions of different websites to go to and reams of material.
That's great. Hey, Dory, how did you enjoy the food in Japan?
I loved it.
Give me one favorite food moment in Japan.
We were waiting to get into the temple, or you know, the main temple in Kyoto, and we went to this tiny restaurant and walked in, and I used a couple of the words I had learned, and they were so thrilled. They were so excited, and we had yuba.
Oh yes.
Soup. Mm-hmm. And it was just wonderful, but these people were so thrilled that these four American women walked in and started saying some Japanese words to
them. When you get away from the famous places, you do blow people away that you meet, that you're genuinely willing to go out there, make mistakes, and stumble around, but learn about Japanese culture.
Oh, definitely. And the ryokan, I say that word wrong all the time.
Ryokan.
The ryokans were wonderful.
You got to stay in one of those fancy traditional bed and breakfast. They're expensive,
yeah, they were much fun.
What an experience. And getting on the bullet train, the Shinkansen, I always have my ekibento. Do they still have ekibento?
Yes, definitely.
The little boxed lunches. And they've got these wonderful compartmentalized boxed lunches made out of like balsa wood with your chopsticks. And
uh-huh.
What a wonderful, delicate eating experience.
Yeah, it's great.
And you go
each region has their own type of bento box, so you can learn the specialties of that region.
So ekibento, is that a boxed lunch, literally?
Yeah, ekibento is station box lunch.
Station box lunch.
Right.
Another treat for me was the hot sake. You can go to the vending machines and actually get hot sake.
Or beer.
Or beer.
Or
hot coffee in the morning. That's the cheapest place we found to get hot coffee.
Yeah, hot coffee, hot tea, hot cocoa, and hot corn soup from a vending machine.
I never understood how they kept those cold and hot.
Well, leave it to the Japanese. Hey, Dory, we got to move on. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Arigato.
Arigato.
Richard in Martinez, how are you doing?
Hello, Rick. I wanted to expand on a couple of things that you've touched on.
Great.
One is staying in temples. When I was there years ago, I had the opportunity to stay at Eihei-ji.
Oh, yes.
And it's up in the mountains and offers accommodations in the Japanese style,
right.
Tatami. And I wondered if there's a way, I plan to go back to Japan next year, and I wonder if there's a way to find out which temples do offer accommodations so I can travel from temple to temple, perhaps.
Ruthie, do you know?
I'm not sure offhand, but what one resource that Dory mentioned is JNTO, or Japan National Tourist Organization.
Mm-hmm.
If you just Google that organization, I'm quite sure you would be able to find out the information about temples that you can stay at.
Very good. Another thing that I wanted to visit while I was there is the living treasures, they call them, the artisans who still work with the old arts of Japan, and I think they're recognized by the country as national living treasures,
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to find out where they are located and arrange visits to see their work?
Well, that's quite a good idea, I think, to go visit these people, because most of them are quite elderly, and some of the skills or crafts that they do, maybe dyeing arts.
Hmm.
I would recommend contacting one of the consulate generals of Japan in the United States. And again, if you either type in Embassy of Japan or Consulate General of Japan in Google or another search engine, I think you could contact the consulates, and they might be able to give you that information.
You know, let's talk about this for just a minute, because this is a fascinating thing to me. Tell me if I understand this correctly, Ruthie. Japan has what they call living national treasures, and these are people they have identified as uniquely talented to contribute to the culture, and the government actually says, you are so precious, we're going to take all the stress of your financial needs away, and we want you to do what God made you to do for the rest of your life with all of your creative energy. And these people are subsidized or just made comfortable and productive by the government. Is that true?
Yes. I don't remember exactly how many there are, but they're in different arts, such as sword making or pottery or weaving or some kind of lacquerware or other kinds of crafts.
Because I always thought we should do that in our culture. You know, let's say you like Simon and Garfunkel. Well, you guys have to make music. You're a living national treasure. Now you're set up.
Well, we have that Hollywood, the Walk of Stars. Is that something like living national treasures?
No. Living national treasures is just recognized by the government and put on Easy Street because we like what you produce.
Right.
All right. Richard, any other thoughts?
Rick, yes. My wife and I were there 2 years ago, and before we left, we arrange for like a companion guide in Kyoto. I think they have them in most major cities. And it was like a free guide for the day. She was just excellent.
Wow.
And our only obligation was to us to, if we went to lunch, to invite her to lunch with us.
And this would have been a student who was practicing English that wanted to share? Or
it ended up a woman who spoke some quite good English. She was she had taught English or somewhere. We became great friends, and she took us home and showed us all over Kyoto.
Boy, that is a great insight.
Very, very good way to. And she knew the rail lines and, you know, how to get from here to there and what was open and stuff. It was just excellent.
Well, you definitely need a local friend to get you around in Japan without making some time-consuming and money-consuming mistakes. And to have a local pal to show you around for the day sounds like a wonderful cultural exchange.
Right. Yeah. And this is something that's available nationwide. I wrote about it in my book, and I'm searching for it right now. But there are these volunteers, often are housewives, who want to interact with English speakers. And they'll volunteer and take you around their city for no charge.
In Kyoto, there's a covered arcade. Not really arcade, it's a shopping and restaurant area. It was great in the wintertime because it was raining quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things to eat that's really a treat is okonomiyaki.
Oh, right.
And there was a special restaurant that you know, we asked around and they told us, oh, you got to go eat it at this restaurant. And it was a wonderful
yaki
experience.
Means what
grilled.
Is that? Grilled, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do you pronounce it?
Okonomiyaki, I believe. Is that right?
And you're cooking right at your table, right? You've got
right.
a grill on your table.
Yes, and you can choose some of the ingredients. And it's just quite a nice experience.
That's another reason why Japan is my favorite place on this planet to eat.
Mm. Right.
Richard, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We got Heather on the line in Burbank. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Hi, Heather.
Hi there. I just wanted to share a couple of experiences that I had. I spent a year in Higashi, Osaka, being an assistant English teacher at one of the public junior high schools.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So one of the things that sticks out in my mind is on the flight over, I was sitting next to a Japanese couple, and the woman with her limited English and her handheld electronic translator we talked most of the way to Japan. And she invited me and a friend of mine to come visit her home.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was shocking almost because that does not happen in the United States. Mm. You know, you meet a stranger and they invite you to their home. And it was a great adventure. And I think just illustrates how gracious and generous the Japanese people are to share their homes and their lives with tourists or people coming to visit Japan.
And I think it's a combination of their natural hospitality and their appetite for having somebody who's a window on the rest of the world into their home. I think they're fascinated mm-hmm. by people from far away.
Yeah.
Right. And I felt that, you know, every day it was an adventure because as, you know, a white American, you don't blend in Japan. And there was, you know, often approached by kids or other adults who, you know, wanted to share something. If we were in the park, wanted to share their sake or invite us to a party. And it was just really easy to strike up conversations, especially with kids, because they were so fascinated by, you know, the littlest things. It was truly a great experience.
Are you saying that you traveled in Japan with children with you, or that you met children there?
I met children there.
Right.
So I was a junior high school teacher. So, you know, being on the train, I would hear them, you know, after learning a bit of Japanese, they go, Gaijin, Gaijin.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew they were talking about me, and then that just opened an opportunity to talk to them. You know, had the opportunity to go to a sumo tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at Halloween, there was a tradition in Osaka of kind of playing Chinese fire drill on a train that went around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the food was great. You know, we found lots of places. Our favorite was Yakiniku, which was the open grill and cooking the meat yourself.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, Heather, we got to move, but thanks very much for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, happy travels.
Bye-bye.
Ruthie, a couple of insights or questions I have about Japanese culture. First of all, longest lifespans in the world and highest suicide rate, I think, or one of the highest suicide rates. What are your comments on that?
Longest lifespan, especially women, the average is, I think, 84 years, probably because they have a good diet, take care of themselves. The suicide, I hadn't heard that it's the highest, but there are certainly stressful times during the lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
That would be students who are trying to study to get into the university of their choice, or overworked, what they call salarymen, office workers who work overtime, and nowadays being laid off is becoming more common. Those would be stressful times.
And I heard that if you get laid off, you're sort of forever behind the curve because it's a very seniority kind of system. Is that right?
Traditionally, it has been, but now even seniority isn't guaranteed anymore.
So the lot of the salaryman, the working guy in Japan, is quite brutal, I think.
Yes, and so many young people nowadays don't want to get a job in a big company.
They don't want to get into that rat race.
So they're called fritters, furita, which means that they'll work at 7-Eleven, and then they go party at night.
So they're not going to buy into the corporate success thing. And then what is the current situation for women? Because my experience was women in the workplace, and it was quite an old boys network or something, and it was very tough for women to get any respect in the workplace.
Well, essentially, there are two tracks for women now. By law, Japanese women are guaranteed equal opportunity with men, but they can choose either to go into a managerial track where they'll be treated pretty much like men over time, being transferred to another city and so on, or the kind of the office track, which they're expected to work for 3 or 4 years, serve tea, and then stop working when they get married. But many women, what they're doing now is they're going overseas, working for foreign companies or getting a degree overseas or starting their own companies. So they're not necessarily hindered by...
So things are changing. This is great.
Yes.
I found when I was in Japan, it was a little frustrating. I wanted to talk politics with people, and I was struck by their interest in not talking politics.
Were you talking U.S. politics or Japanese politics?
I was talking international politics.
I see. Well, people do bring up, you know, things about the U.S. and especially the war right now going on in Iraq, and what do we think of Bush and so on. Some people will talk about that.
Okay, and is it still easy to get a job teaching English for Americans in Japan?
You can get a job, but keep in mind that most everyone nowadays is highly qualified. That is, people have master's degrees in teaching English as a second language, so there's a lot of competition.
Right.
You also have to be careful about what kind of place you teach for. There's a lot of private language schools that will work you to death and not pay too well, and you don't have much control over your work environment.
Wow.
But the JET program that one of our callers said she went to Japan, that's still a good way to go. It's sponsored by the Japanese Ministry of Education.
Well, I'm sure there's more information on this and much more in Ruthie Kanegi's guidebook, Living Abroad in Japan. Ruthie, thank you so much for being part of our show and giving us an insight into a fascinating country, Japan.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rick.
Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at aa.com. American Airlines knows why you fly.